You're listening to WAIF in Cincinnati. I'm Chris Comer, and I'll be here with you for a couple hours. In a couple minutes, we're going to talk to Bill Laswell. Who is Bill Laswell? I bet that's what you're asking right now. He's a bass player. He's a producer. He writes music. He's an improviser, and he's an all-around musical nut. So we'll be cracking that nut here in a minute. This is the band Painkiller, featuring Bill Laswell on bass, Mick Harris on drums. He used to be in that band Napalm Death. John Zorn on saxophone. Painkiller.
Thank you.
Pain Killer with Mick Harris on drums, John Zorn screaming and yelling and playing saxophone, and Bill Laswell playing the bass guitar. Before I attempt to introduce Bill Laswell, I think I'm going to ask him to do it himself, because the guy has recorded so damn many records. Where do you start? Whether it's bass playing in jazz and music and rock and roll, or whether the guy's twiddling knobs and making some kind of techno, ambient, new wave kind of sounding record, this guy has probably done it all. And he had a big hit that everyone has heard of called Rocket back in the early 80s with Herbie Hancock, which is, I think, how he's still funding all of his music. Hello, Bill Laswell.
Yes.
Hi, this is Chris Comer from Cincinnati, Ohio. It's good to talk to you.
All right.
Now, I made an assumption there in my brief introduction, which I'd really rather have you introduce yourself. I don't know where to begin. But are you still funding yourself off that Herbie Hancock record?
No, I was never doing that. In fact, couldn't really, on the way the business was structured at that point, there was no funding ever. So it's a very small part of what's been happening over the years.
Well, you put out so many records, I'm wondering where you get the money.
Well, you get money for doing them, normally. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start off with, who is Bill Laswell, and do we want to discuss Bill Laswell, the bass player, or Bill Laswell, the producer, first?
Well, I think it's all the same, really. It's about hopefully trying to stay involved in innovative sort of activity and creating projects that sort of manifest as recorded music. So it's all related.
It is all related, but like you said, they're all different projects. Whether you're in a band called Last Exit or Massacre or Praxis or Material, or whether you're recording under your own name, Bill Laswell, or collaborating with other individuals, how does it all tie in together? And I also wanted to mention that you've got everything from really whacked out jazz music to this. What is that?
What is that? I don't know.
That's from a CD called Visitation.
Okay.
That you did with Jonah Sharp.
That's right.
And what's that?
I'm not sure.
You're not going to give away trade secrets.
Well, I don't even remember that. I wouldn't have known what it was.
You wouldn't have?
I don't think so.
Why not? I mean, you recorded the damn thing.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like anything else. Move on, hopefully.
Uh-huh. I mean, is that a bass I hear, or a synthesizer, or something else you don't even know anymore?
I can't remember.
Well, what are you currently working on, and what's next?
I usually try to work on sort of several things at the same time, so you don't get stuck with the job of sort of repeating yourself with the same activity every day. So I just finished a kind of restructuring and remixing for Sony, a lot of the electric music of Miles Davis from the period of 1969 till 74.
What's different about that period of Miles Davis than the older stuff he's done with his famous quartets and quintets of the 60s and the more fusion-sounding electric stuff he did in the 1980s?
Well, the earlier quintets and sixth groups were playing quite obviously ideas and compositions and sort of thematic arrangements with a group that played, you know, chordal accompaniment to those themes and then solos, and it was based on a kind of concept that you could use the word jazz to describe, in that it played a theme or a head and then played a solo and returned to a head and then went out on a solo, and it was a very fixed format. And then the later on, the fusion period of the 80s was also very formatted and very fixed in its design. But the period I chose was a time where they weren't really making compositions or song form. They were really just rolling tape, which applies very much to the same type of activity that I've been doing in the 80s and 90s. So it makes a lot of sense to go back and reinterpret a lot of those tapes as different arrangements.
And Miles' bands from that period, the early 70s, he was just improvising and jamming, wasn't he?
Well, it was more about, I think, the sensibility and creating a mood or a style. And a lot of people had freedom to interpret the mood or the style in any way they chose, which people could say improvising, but it's more like sort of, I don't know, improvised composition in a way, because everything has a very fixed language that it's all relating back and forth and throughout. We'll be right back.
On the Corner by Miles Davis is what we're listening to right now. A record he made in the early 70s, what was it, 73 or 74. And I might add that he didn't credit the musicians who played on the record. It was just a Miles Davis record. Just said Miles Davis on the corner with a little album cover artwork, looked like something out of Shaft. And he didn't say who was playing the drums or the bass or nothing else. This is Chris Comer. I'm talking to Bill Laswell. The bass player, the producer, the guy from New York. He's currently working on a new record of reinterpretations of mixing and editing of the music of Miles Davis from this very period, the early 70s, as we were just discussing. And when you say that you're going to work with those tapes and with that material, what exactly are you going to do? Are you going to take the master tapes and remix them and put your own sound effects on top of them, or what?
Rearrange performances, re-EQ things, change very much the sonic picture of things pretty extremely.
And what do you hope to accomplish when it's all said and done?
Something that sounds a lot better than the original interpretation.
Oh, whoa, slow down. A lot of purists are going to say, how can you do something that sounds better than Miles Davis?
Well, purists would have to check themselves because, again, it wasn't songs or compositions. It was editing that created those pieces of music during that time. It was decisions and judgments that were made by other people, not by Miles Davis, and edits that were made by someone else, not by Miles Davis.
So will the new album sound like Miles Davis, or will it sound like Bill Laswell?
It would sound exactly like him if he was a bigger picture of what he was doing, a lot fuller, a lot more dynamics, and a lot more of everything.
And you're doing a similar project with the music of Bob Marley, aren't you?
Bob Marley project is more of a dub version of the pieces of Bob Marley's music, like if someone did kind of dub mixes of those pieces, which is a lot more conventional than what I did with Miles Davis.
What is dub music? Dub music is something that you've been heavily involved in. I could probably list about a dozen records you've done that would be classified as dub, but
right.
What is it?
Well, that's a word that we started using that came out of Jamaica when people would record a song for a single, for example, that would be an A-side. To release a single, you obviously need a B-side. So people to make a full A and B side, just dub, you take out the vocals or add different processing effects, reverbs and delays to the instruments and do kind of random mixing and adding and subtracting of the parts so that you have an alternate version of the A side, the pop or the song, it's the song form, and your B side, which is an abstract version of that, became known as a dub because you were dubbing. The
I just dropped in a CD here called Mysteries of Creation Axiom Dub. Axiom is obviously the name of your record label, but what is this CD all about? You got two CDs, you got a dozen different artists on this thing, and they're all doing something called dub.
Right. Well, that particular CD, it's just a variation of people from many different backgrounds, from different times, from different countries, and all trying to apply what we just described to sort of the situations more in the current or modern times.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the music that you've recorded, if not all of it, since your career began, most of the stuff I've been following is instrumental music. I've never known you to be in a band where there was a formal lead singer with lyrics doing pop songs, the kind of stuff that you can make $1 million off of. What's the difference between that kind of music and the kind of music that you're doing, besides the obvious fact that there's no lead singer?
Well, I mean, I've worked with a lot of singers. It's just in constructing live situations where it's, in a lot of situations, it's very improvised. For the live approach, there's not always a person that does singing that can apply to that particular kind of a situation. It's a little more difficult, so it lends itself more to instrumental music. Or the sound in general.
Are there any singers you've ever wanted to work with or have worked with that you enjoyed? And as a side note, I know that you were one of the people who helped discover Whitney Houston.
Well, that was a long time ago, but I mean, this kind of singing is always interesting to me, and it's valuable, and it's part of a tradition that, you know, rhythm and blues singers have always been interesting to me. It's just lately I haven't worked with so many, but I'm open to doing that, and from time to time I do work with singers.
Yeah, that record you did with James Blood Ulmer and Ronald Shannon Jackson is a highlight of my record collection. I can listen to that record over and over again because the rhythm section is so groovy and flowing, and it just works with Blood Ulmer's lead vocals.
Right. Well, there's a new one coming out with Blood also doing some singing with the drummer called Ziggy Modalis from the Meters, and Bernie Worrell and Amina Myers, and that's called Third Rail, and it's going to come out on Antilles, on Verve. Probably in March.
So Blood is still out there and working, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Good, good.
I belong in the USA. I don't know if I wanna stay. I believe in the USA. All the people there feel the same way. Hear me say, if you don't know how you hope to be, ask somebody please. Let me tell you the reason why. You don't have to try. don't get yourself in a jam. Ooh. You can sure make a plan. Just as long as you understand, ooh. Freedom, oh. Freedom ain't for every man. Well, oh. Yeah. Freedom, oh. Freedom ain't for every man.
James Blood Ulmer singing I Belong in the USA from the album America. Do You Remember the Love? It's on Blue Note Records. Blue Note Records put that one out. James Blood Ulmer with Bill Laswell on the bass guitar and Ronald Shannon Jackson playing drums. We're talking to Bill Laswell tonight. We've been talking about some of the different projects he's working on, doing music with old tapes of Miles Davis's and Bob Marley's and his work with James Blood Ulmer. This CD is brand new. It's called South Delta Space Age by Third Rail. Third Rail is James Blood Ulmer once again with Bill Laswell, Joseph Zigaboo Modaliste on drums. He used to play with the Meters, Bernie Worrell, and Amina Claudine Myers playing organs, pianos, and assorted keyboards. Brand new music from Bill Laswell and James Blood Ulmer. We'll be right back talking to Bill Laswell just a little bit more right after this. The song's called Itchin'.
Itchin'!
Told you.
Ow! Itchin' to hug you, girl, in my arms. Itchin' to get to tell you that I love you so strong. Itchin' to find the power. Just to know, if you get together, love you so. Oh, the love in the world, so won't be no cure. Oh, the love in the world, you got to know. You
Blood Omer with Bill Laswell there on the third rail, South Delta Space Age with Itchin. This is Chris Comer. You're listening to WAIF FM, the bottom of your dial. You can't go any lower than us, and this truly is the lowest of the low. I'm talking to Bill Laswell right now, perhaps the highest of the high in the music biz. Where do you want to take it from now? Can we talk about some of your older groups?
Whatever you need to do.
Okay, take a listen to this. I'm sure you will have recognized this, and tell me a little bit about this next record that I'm going to play for you. We're playing a little Drop the Needle here. Now, to the casual listener, they're going to say, what in the hell is going on there? You got a guitar playing in one rhythm, the bass, who knows what he's doing, and that drummer, he's playing a rhythm totally different than the guitar player and the bass player.
Right.
That's Massacre, as you know, Fred Frith on guitar, Bill Maher on drums. Am I pronouncing his name correctly?
Fred Maher.
Fred Maher and yourself, Bill Laswell, on bass. This is one of the first records I ever picked up that you played on. How did this thing get started, and whatever happened to your work with Fred Frith?
I think that was early, maybe 80, 81, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was recorded in Paris, I think.
Really?
I think part of it's from a live concert. But I met Fred Frith when he first came to New York, and we helped put together some groups to create festivals and sort of showcases or outlets for him and some other musicians that were coming over from England and from Europe. And I stayed in touch with him over the years. Around that time, we created this trio with Fred Maher, which I think lasted for a year or two.
Yeah, and you guys, like we were talking about, it sounds like for the most part you were just jamming and improvising and having a pretty good time. Was it fun?
Yeah, but it started out with pieces that were structured, that were written by or created by Fred, and then later on we started to improvise using that same language, and found that the improvised pieces that we did later on sounded almost as structured as the written pieces. So it became, we were able to improvise structure, which I think kind of relates to what I was saying about the Miles Davis work.
Do you think enough improvising musicians, whether they're jazz or rock or anything else, improvise enough structure? Or do you think when guys improvise, they just twiddle around like the Grateful Dead too much?
Well, there's a lot of people that just play nothing, and they call it improvising. And I always preferred to hear people play that had other aspects of their playing beyond just making noise. And it's, you know, I like noise as much as anyone, but certain times you like to get a bit more out of a statement than just the noise of it.
Right on. I'm going to play another piece from another band of yours that I think improvises structure just about as good as any group I've ever heard, and that would be Last Exit. Now, you guys did one studio record. Last Exit was Ronald Shannon Jackson playing the drums, Peter Brotzman playing the saxophone, yourself on bass, and Sonny Sherrock on guitar. Now, is it Sherrock or Sherrock?
Sherrock.
Sonny Sherrock is playing guitar. In this group, you guys did three or four live albums, and then the studio record. I want to talk about the studio record you did.
Right.
How did you put that together? I know there's a story behind it.
Mostly just improvising a lot in the studio and then putting it together with tape and some sort of quick overdubs.
Mm-hmm. Didn't you guys go in like one at a time or something?
I can't remember. I think the drums and bass, we did a lot of that, and then we added things after that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, now I know that you like to move on from project to project pretty quick, but I gotta ask you, why didn't you record more music in the studio with Last Exit? Iron Path.
I would have liked to. I didn't think we had the outlets to release anything, and we didn't always have the time to do it properly. It was very much a live band.
I think Iron Path may be one of the best records ever recorded in any idiom and any kind of music you want to talk about. Do you concur with me? And as far as your catalog goes, how does Iron Path stack up with some of the other records you've produced?
Well, I was really, you know, I was happy with it. I thought it was a definite breakthrough at the time, and I don't recall getting too much support on that. So
why not? It was so heavy.
Just to the next thing.
I mean, this thing makes Black Sabbath look like a bunch of hippies, you know? This
right.
is a very heavy record. See what I mean? Don't tell me you couldn't get any support for this. I know Europe was crazy for Last Exit, but how come you couldn't get any support in America?
Well, you still can't really get too much support in America, except for, you know, pockets of interest in places that are all very far from each other. It's very hard to work in America doing this kind of activity without people becoming very bitter very quickly.
And what do you mean by bitter? Jaded?
Not so much jaded in that they don't feel like they're being treated properly or respected or even accepted in some cases. And there's a lot of great musicians who, and it's an old story, end up spending most of their time working in Europe and then second Japan.
Or working at a fried chicken place.
Well, that's probably the safest way to go.
We're talking to Bill Laswell, and over the years you've put out how many records? Maybe 100, 200? I don't know.
No, it's quite a bit more than that, I think, at this point.
And scadillions of them. You've produced, composed, improvised, and played bass on... Oh, God, I don't know where to start. Where do you get... I asked you before where you get the money. Where do you get the inspiration for all this different music?
Well, I think it's important to keep investigating new things and not to forget. Can you hold on 1 second? I got to get rid of this. Somebody
sure.
Call.
Well, in typical fashion, we're being put on hold by our guest, Bill Laswell. I'm your host, Chris Comer. I'll be here with you a little while longer, or at least as long as I can keep Bill on the phone.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, sorry.
Who is that? Ronnie James Dio?
Hopefully not. It's a secret.
It's a big secret. You're always working on something.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? Your inspirations. Maybe
yeah.
I can do a quick little edit here. Besides some of the things we already talked about, the old Miles Davis groups, what are the big influences on how you turned out today, musically?
Well, there's so many, you know, and they should be still happening every day, so it's very hard to make a list of those people and events without leaving out probably about most of it. But it's so many, and if you just grab a handful of things, you can always associate with certain times. I mean, I think at a certain age, when people are growing up, certain things affect them at that age more than other times in their life. So I was able to see sort of Jimi Hendrix and Miles Davis and people like this and improvising rock bands like Cream, and then later on improvising sort of funk groups like Funkadelic, and a lot of more experimental music, and then gradually into music that came from other cultures over time, which I got to understand by relating it to things I heard here from Pharoah Sanders or John Coltrane. I would discover Indian music and African music, and then music in Central Asia, and it just keeps kind of unfolding, and it's endless, really.
And you work it all into almost every project you work on. You call them all projects, and I'll tell you, I don't know anybody that has been in as many bands as you and been the leader of all of them.
Well, I wasn't really the leader in most of those live things. I get associated as being that because of being around sometimes for a while, but in a lot of the cases, I would much rather not be, and there's a lot of people that are better suited to do that than I would be.
Well, you're definitely the leader of a project you call Material, which started out with Fred Maher, the guy from Massacre, and another guy named Michael Beinhorn. Mm-hmm. Am I saying his name right?
Yeah.
And then I don't know who all is in the group now, except for you got Nicky Skopelidis. Am I saying his name right?
Skopelidis.
Skopelidis. Is he Greek?
Yes.
Is he New York Greek or is he Greek Greek?
New York Greek, Greek Greek.
Yeah, okay. All you guys from New York are from somewhere else. I seem to think I read somewhere that you're from Michigan.
Yeah, I was born in Illinois, and I came here from Michigan.
Anyway, Material. What's Material, and why do you have so many different people work through it?
Well, right now it's kind of a production company, and I just use it, the name to create records or concerts or events, and whenever we can put together the right people to do the right kind of work, then we call it that, and we, you know, try to make events or recordings.
Why so many different names? Why haven't you gone the route of somebody like Robert Fripp and call all your bands the same thing, King Crimson?
Well, King Crimson sounds like King Crimson, and all of my different things don't.
No, but there's always definite carryovers, like some of the stuff on Sacrifice by the album Praxis.
Right.
The band Praxis, the album Sacrifice. Some of that stuff sounds a little bit like Material, you know?
Could be, yeah, but not always directly. And there's a lot of developments in Praxis. The last group we had 5 turntable players, and that's probably very different than the Material.
5 turntables? That's bigger than most rap groups will have.
No, it's battle DJs and with guitar, bass, and drums.
Now, is that the thing you did, and I'm looking for it here, called the turntable record? I got all my CDs here, and when you want to find one, you can't. Altered Beats, is that the Altered Beats group you're referring to?
Altered Beats was more of a compilation of a lot of different people, and this Praxis idea was live, so far only live, and there's a record coming out, I think, next month on a label run by Alan Douglas, who was the producer of Jimi Hendrix, who's made a new label, and he's putting that out next, I think in March.
A Praxis turntable record.
Well, Praxis live with DJ.
Now, what do you think of the turntable as a musical instrument? A lot of people think that that sounds silly, or they don't even know that LPs still exist because everybody's got compact discs now. But how does the turntable relate to a live working rock and roll band?
Well, it works as an instrument. A turntable is an instrument that can be any instrument. All you have to do is choose a sound and play it.
And you scoot the record back and forth.
You can do that. There's all kinds of techniques that have developed since the early 80s that people
Could you describe a couple to the uninitiated?
Well, let's say you have to check for more of the individuals that are doing that. And in Brooklyn, there's a group called the X-Men, which is different configurations of DJs that play in a kind of competitive battle style, but are also very much individual artists. In San Francisco, there's a group called Invisible Scratch Pickles, which is with a DJ called Q-Bert, and Mixmaster Mike and Shortcut and people like that who are very much creating their own style. There's another one called Beat Junkies. There's a DJ in Florida called Craze, and there's still the roots of the whole thing, which started in the South Bronx with a guy called Grand Wizard Theodore, which then gave way to DST and Grandmaster Flash and all these people. And it's all about a 20-year evolution of this idea of the turntable being manipulated as a sound source, as first a percussive instrument, but now I see that it's not limited to percussion, that you can think of it from anything from a drum to an orchestra.
Could you think of it as like the band behind the rapper, instead of having a rap person sitting in front reading some poetry? This is the music that's behind that.
You could think of it as the band behind the rapper, but you could think of it as the band behind the concert violinist as well.
Mm-hmm. Have there been a lot of rap records made with concert violins?
Probably not enough, but
maybe it's time to start. And you just might be the man to record one.
It's open.
You saw a turntable talking?
I saw a turntable talking. It was either that or it was my lunchbox.